at 8.07 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. On this Wednesday, Sean and Dalton, Dr. Bill, Kane, Kelly, the whole gang. Remember, phone number, text line, 343-0106. Same number, does both. How about that? 343-0106. And you know this guy. Y'all say hello to Jeff Poor from Lanyap, Breitbart, Yellowhammer News, The Jeff Poor Show on WVNN in Huntsville. Hey, man.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Sean.
It's always a pleasure and a lot to talk about here on this somber anniversary of 9/11, 18 years later. And it does go into the story yesterday of Bolton being removed, and we can get into whether he resigned or he was fired and if it does matter one way or another. As a person who would be... Am I fair? I'll put this out, and then you can. I say the neocon's neocon, John Bolton, as National Security Advisor.
Yeah, I think that's an appropriate description. Here's the problem. Donald Trump watches a lot of cable news. Bolton is very good on TV. Bolton understands a lot of it. It's the understanding that is Bolton's asset, and not necessarily the prescription, the policy prescriptions, the figuring out the solutions that really, that's where the rub lied.
Well, okay, so, because I guess if we went in the time machine back when the president hired Bolton, I was not real happy because, some people will call me different things. I will call it a limited interventionist out there, and that's the opposite. I mean, it's something that showed a direction that I thought was very different than the direction President Trump campaigned on. What I heard when in 2016 in the campaign was limiting the scope of U.S. intervention in different places in the world. And then when John Bolton came on, I said, well, there goes that.
Well, yeah, and I think there's some truth to that. There's a couple other things that we all remember the John Bolton era in the Trump administration. I don't think because we went into any kind of wars or anything. He may have been trying to steer the ship in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
We'll find out in due time. But look at how I would say Trump's policy toward Iran, very hawkish toward Iran at a time when, and it is still going on, when Iran's meddling in the Persian Gulf. And I think the other big part that we don't talk about because we're so focused on the Middle East is Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of getting right on what's going on in this hemisphere. So, I mean, yeah, he probably really didn't line up with the Trump doctrine on foreign policy, but he did have some accomplishments. So I just think that in the end, probably not a big fan of meeting with the Taliban at Camp David or anything along those lines.
You know, Jeff, Trump's been asked about having Bolton in the administration plenty of times, and one of the things he kept bringing up was that he wants to hear arguments from both sides. He wants doves in the White House. He also wants these hawks like Bolton in the White House, and then he could kind of come to the best decision. Do you feel like that's actually what Trump has been doing? He's been taking all this information from the Boltons, from the Pompeos, and then kind of going off on his own, or do you think that's just the aura he was putting out there and that Trump is kind of just doing his own thing?
Trump's mostly doing his own thing. A lot of Trump, all these books, all these tell-all books that I've read about inside the Trump White House. And who knows how much of it is true? That Trump's not a stickler for the details. He wants good people to figure out good things. He's going to hire the best and the brightest. Remember all that from the 2016 campaign. But I don't necessarily know if he was if he had on one side Rand Paul and on the other side John Bolton, and they were having crossfire in the Oval Office, and then he was coming to his conclusion like Judge Wapner on the People's Court or something like that. I think he was always kind of a guy that was anti-interventionist, and it goes back to how he criticized George W. Bush.
Yep.
And that class of neocons.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was hearing that during the campaign. I was going, okay, this is something different. I remember even talking about it. You and I have probably talked about it at length, that I thought it would be popular with a lot of people in the country that were war weary. And that's why when Bolton came in, I went, oh, no, here we go. But now he has a change. That person will tell us something or not tell us something about the direction going forward with foreign policy.
We'll see who replaces Bolton. And there's a lot of talk about this individual, Brian Hook, who's Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's liaison to Iran on to Iran on that, and maybe a little bit more in the mold of a John Bolton. There's some others. This Colonel McGregor, Douglas McGregor, that's on Fox News a lot. The only thing I would say, somebody like that, they understand the cost of war, the price of war, and maybe that's what this administration needs going into a 2020 election cycle. If you have a general in there, Trump loves some military brass. He loves those generals. But generals are very political because you don't get to be a general in the military without have some understanding military politics. So maybe along the lines of one of these colonels, one of these outspoken colonels that's, more along the lines of let's build a strong fortress America, but not really use it unless we have to.
If you had to guess, Jeff, how long until we see Bolton on Fox News again? And do you think he'll be one of these guys who leaves the White House and then turns against the president, or do you think he'll still be pro-Trump?
I think you'll see both Fox News, CNN, MSNBC off all the TV networks maybe for a couple of weeks. Then he'll sign a big deal with one of them. I'm not convinced it's Fox News, but he'll get his story out there. He'll get a book deal. He'll profit off of this. So he'll get some kind of job once again at the American Enterprise Institute at a think tank. He'll do well, but I'm not convinced he's going to be like turn on Trump like a Bill Kristol or something along those lines. I think he's still going to be pushing for the very hawkish foreign policy, whether that's anti-Trump or pro-Trump.
Yeah, you're so savvy in this. So lay out, if you were inside the campaign for re-election for President Trump, what kind of foreign policy should the Trump administration be running with in 2020? I mean, let's just get it down to just raw politics. What works?
It's the Reagan, I think, approach. Strong defense, maybe not necessarily as maybe not with the spending quite at those levels of GDP, but we didn't fire a single shot in the Cold War. Mm-hmm. Won the Cold War, and it was just kind of based on the Americans' ability to have their guns and butter, with the Soviet Union was just guns or butter, and that was kind of, that was the approach that we were, we had all the cool weapon systems, and don't mess with us. And if I'm Donald Trump, you want to have that kind of strong military where that's the big kid on the block. I think we're not going to do anything to upset him, and we're going to, with these other actors in the world, that would be their attitude, since we would have the biggest, the best military, etc.
Okay. When we come back, I want to talk a little more of the state news and what happened earlier this week with the removal of State Senator Chris Elliott from the ATRIP 2 committee and having that reassignment there given to Vivian Figures, Senator Vivian Figures. We'll talk about this more and a whole lot more with Jeff Poor when we return right here on Mobile Mornings. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Wednesday. Continue talking to our buddy Jeff Poor. Jeff Poor Show, WVNN. You had Terry Lathan on yesterday, didn't you?
Day
before yesterday. And it was talking with her. I had talked with her a couple weeks ago, but kind of looking at the questions you were asking, pretty interesting here. As I would say, what did we looked up the odds. Well, Vegas or England did not have odds on Doug Jones getting reelected. We couldn't even find those.
I couldn't find in the states. I couldn't find any Alabama primary or Senate election odds. But a site in the UK had just the Republican primary odds, and currently has Tuberville and Byrne tied as the favorites at 7-2 odds, I think. Behind them, not very far away, John Merrill, and then a distant.
Then everybody else.
Yeah. Just the one last name was Roy Moore, and he was at like 9-1 odds or something like that.
So with that discussion, did y'all get into the mounted effort here to make sure that Republicans get that Senate seat back?
Yeah, that was pretty much the thrust of the conversation there about how this one is personal, and Doug Jones, even though Trump's on the ballot, not going to take any chances, not going to let it happen again.
All right. And that's the one thing with the toll discussion down here. I'm going to rededicate myself to getting back into a Senate discussion because we hadn't been paying as much attention to it over the last month or so around here. And now we got a little time freed up. Speaking of which, asked this question. You and I had talked about it and kind of agreed. And then our buddy Todd Stacey last week, you know, I was asking him, hey, will there be political retribution for the opposition to the toll? And he's like, nah, I don't really think. And then when he was on with me this week, he kind of, I said, well, was having Senator Chris Elliott removed from the ATRIP 2 committee some sort of retribution? I think he grudgingly said yes.
Yeah, I think I think that's a pretty safe assumption.
So this is, unless I'm missing something, this is not even like subtle or nuanced. This is pretty obvious political retribution.
Yeah, and you know, if you told me a year ago this was how Ivy was going to be playing ball, I would have laughed at you. And she did, because she didn't do that at all in that first, that finishing out Bentley's last term as governor. And you know, the willingness to play hardball with the gas tax, especially the gas tax, but also with this ATRIP 2 committee. I mean, it's an ATRIP 2 committee. You know, most people don't know what that is, but
right.
It's clear what's going on now. They know what it is for sure.
Yes,
but the optics of it. I mean, why do this? Why? And furthermore, why would you replace him with Vivian Figures, who voted against the gas tax?
Yep.
And is a Democrat. I mean, what? It's not enough to find another Republican to replace him with. They had to go, and then it's almost like they needed to add insult to injury by doing so.
Well, and wondering about that, I mean, you could make one argument, I think Todd did, that, hey, you couldn't find another Republican from Southwest Alabama that didn't oppose the toll. So he said, yeah, there was nobody that the governor could replace that wasn't, you know, an outspoken, opponent to the toll. So then she had no other choice. I don't know that I buy that, but
I think there's going to be some more. We may not see it. It may not be as public. I don't know. I've heard Greg Albritton's name mentioned as a possible target.
Oh, target.
A target of the Ivy office. Yeah, and he's the chairman of the Senate General Fund, right?
Yep.
I don't know you want to mess with him, but they're not happy with him. Maybe he held up some contracts, some money for some of the legal work to do with this toll bridge. He was in on this as well. I think that there's going to be... I don't necessarily know they're going to go after him the way they went after Elliott. I mean, Elliott's a freshman member, and he's a little more vulnerable. But I do think there's more to come. I don't know necessarily it's going to be in the form of we're going to keep road projects from happening in Mobile and Baldwin counties, but it may come in other forms and other ways to go after these guys and kind of show there are consequences to getting crossways with the Ivy administration.
Now there's been listeners called in about this and texted in and emailed about it. Do you feel there's any veracity to the naming of Senator Figures, who is black, as being some sort of, some penance, some mea culpa here for the blackface debacle for Governor Ivy?
Maybe. The timing of all that was weird. And here's what we know, Sean. In April is when the Auburn archivist discovered this audio. The knowledge of this audio that Ivy was in blackface has at least been known by at least one or two individuals since April, and it comes out the day after the toll bridge ordeal sinks. So that's a good bit of time right there. That's 4 or 5 months, right?
Yep.
So you're telling me the timing of this had nothing to do with the bridge at all? I'm more skeptical. Now I'm more. My spidey senses go off and make me think. Well, we could get all this knocked out of the way before a Labor Day weekend, and no one will remember. Guess what happened? That's pretty much what happened. No one's still really talking about the toll bridge and all that. We're not talking about statewide anymore. It's you guys down in Southwest Alabama. And the blackface thing lasted for a couple of days. Never caught on in the national media.
It didn't. Oddly enough, I mean, you look at that compared to Virginia, it didn't, man. And I thought, in the simplistic view of national media of us in the South, this fits their narrative. And maybe, just maybe, and let me throw something into this. The fact that, it is a female and not a male. That would be so ridiculous. It sounds ridiculous for me to say it, but in today's media cycle, that may have kept some of the wheels from turning.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I would have thought the media would have tried to force the issue if they were going to make it a big issue. It just seems like there's a lot of other things going on at the time. There was a hurricane. There were Sharpies. Right. A lot of other things to beat up on Donald Trump on, and this would have kind of been a side story. And like, the media is so focused right now, it's just to muddy up Donald Trump. And how can you tie KIV and Donald Trump? Maybe you can. They asked him about it at a press gaggle as he boarded Marine One, remember?
Yep.
But they were without an easy way to make that connection, without some photos of Trump and Ivy kind of out there. They never really were able to do that, and it just became too much of a heavy lift. Let's just go after Trump for this hurricane stuff. And I think that's probably the motivation. Without an Ivy Trump connection, there is no motivation for our national media, such as it is.
Out of all the butterflies national media chases against President Trump, one that I think the economy question, you know, it started off. Now there's a ABC Washington Post poll that says 6 in 10 Americans say a recession is likely in the next year. Now, remember that it was, 2 weeks ago that Economist, I think 30-something percent, said a recession could happen in the next 2 years. And they reported that story. I wanted to say, so the majority of economists don't think the recession is coming. And I guess that poll didn't get the traction. So now they're rolling out a poll. What Americans just, you know, man on the street kind of thing. Is you could ask, I got some kinfolk, you could ask them all kind of questions. They'll give you all kind of answers. Is this... Because to me, this would be the issue for President Trump. I mean, they're almost willing a recession, because that's the one I think, if I'm President Trump, I'm scared of.
I agree with that. They're talking up the recession. And I know your show's on at the same time, but if you want to get it, the direction of the wind of what the media wants and sees, watch Morning Joe, watch Joe and Mika's opening segment, and all of a sudden they switch from Russia collusion and all that and guns, and now they're talking about economy. Now, there are a few pundits out there that will straight up say, I think we need a recession so Trump will get out of office, but I think Not as many are actually saying it, but that's what they're thinking. I mean, that's Washington for you, right? And guess what? If there's a recession in the United States, guess where it's probably not going to be felt a whole lot?
Yeah, Washington
D.C.
Yeah, where the home prices, in 2007, whatever, the home prices didn't even drop, I don't think, in the Washington metro.
Golly. Right. So that's the thinking. That's sort of a bubble and everything. But I do think it's there's a lot of people out there that are hoping for some kind of sideways economy to get this president out of office. Look, the economy's everything, I think. Mm-hmm. You're better off now than you were 4 years ago, and that's the question. I don't think any of this tax return stuff or the Russia stuff or anything else they tried to throw at him is going to stick. If the economy goes south, that's when things get a little dicey for his reelection chances.
Yeah, and maybe you can give more insight, but to me, we talk about the cement being dry on both sides, those people that always hate the president no matter what, and those who always support the president no matter what. And the fewer in number, I believe, are the people in between, but that's who the president needs to have show up and vote and have Republicans turn out at great numbers as well. The economy to those voters, I think, is probably number one. All this other stuff that's talked about is so far down the list, but behind the economy.
Well, and look at this election in North Carolina last night, North Carolina 9. The Republican winning, it was supposed to be a bellwether. For some reason, at 8:30 Central Time this morning, it's not anymore. But, the economy's doing well. That's a swing district, and the Republican eked out the win. If there's not a reason for somebody to vote against something, they're probably not going to come out and vote, and I think a bad economy gives a lot of people a reason to vote against something. Meanwhile, you have Trump with a solid base, a solid 30, 35, 40%, whatever it is. It's there. All he's got to do is build off of that. He'd get to 50. Even with his low approval ratings or whatever, he's still in a pretty good position.
There he is. Jeff Poor, as always, man, thank you, and we'll talk again soon.
All right, thanks for having me on, Sean.
All right, Jeff Poor, and if you've... Great, great follow on Twitter. The guy is like, He knows more things about what's going on in the state than I think the people up on Goat Hill. So make sure to follow at Jeff Poore over on Twitter. Or is it Jeff underscore Poore? Jeff underscore.
That's right.
Underscore. It's all about the underscore. Yeah. Thank you, Kane. 837 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. Sean, Dalton, Dr. Pill. Of course, that guy Kane. Kelly with headlines. Our 1-800-GOT-JUNK online opinion poll question. Will South Alabama receive political retribution from Montgomery for killing the I-10 Mobile River Bridge deal? You can tell us what you think when you vote online. Front page of FMTalk1065.com. Stats are saying 100% of y'all say yes.
That's
we gotta screenshot that and send that to the folks up at Birmingham Talk Radio and like Jeff and the crew up in Huntsville. Say, here's what it looks like in Southwest Alabama.
Yeah, our last poll question was one of the most split polls I had seen, and that was asking whether Governor Kay Ivey would actually serve out the rest of her term through 2022, and it was a straight 50-50 by the time we pulled that poll down for the new one. I hadn't seen that one that close, and then I also haven't seen one that's completely 100% one way or the other. So everybody down here expecting some retribution, some payback for Montgomery.
Hey, it's already started. And speaking of governors, or in this case, former governors, I got to, before we finish up this morning, I got to give the former Governor Bentley update. Hey, he and Rebecca took a trip. So we'll talk about
really?
That. Oh, yeah. They took a trip. All right. Let me tell you about my buddy Trey with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. If you've got junk at your house, your office, outside your house, I keep going back to this because I think, you know, when I start thinking about 1-800-GOT-JUNK, I'm picturing stuff that's under a roof somewhere. Could be in a garage, could be in a storage unit, could be in your house, could be up the creaky ladder, stair, springy thing that gets you into the attic. That's the kind of stuff you picture, but you may have some junk around the house that needs gone. If you have the full Pioneer-style swing set and your youngest child is starting graduate school, let it go. Let it go. Call Trey and the crew to get that. He even told me one time they were cleaning out a storage shed in the backyard, and the guy said, "Can y'all get the shed?" He said, "You mean the stuff in there, right?" He said, "No, the shed, too." He said, "Oh, yeah, they can get that, too." So, listen, if you've got junk outside the house, inside the house, at the office, at the storage unit, you need it gone. You need 1-800-GOT-JUNK. 11 years in the business, my buddy Trey Bennett. 1-800-GOT-JUNK online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. And make that appointment. Get them out there. See what they can do for you. All right, 8:40, and we'll go to the phones here. Don't let me forget this Bentley stuff.
Okay, I won't.
Because I've got some of the pictures I retweeted on my Twitter feed. They were up. Now, they were, I'll tell you in a second. Jay is in Mobile first up.
You there, Jay?
And go. And Jay in Mobile, and go.
And Jay.
All right. We've lost Jay.
Oh,
all
no.
Right. Which is good, actually, because I'll wait a second. Y'all can hop on, but let me do this. Let me do this Bentley stuff.
I think I know what you said, that there were pictures on your Twitter feed of the governor, and Jay immediately went off listening to the radio and went to your Twitter feed to find out what's going on with the former governor.
So the story is, this is a tweet from Governor Robert Bentley. That's his Twitter handle still, Gov R. Bentley. Mm. Thank you to our Alabama congressional delegation for hearing Alabama doctors' concerns about rising drug costs and helping patients get access to affordable meds, quality care, especially in rural areas. Great day with the AAD on the Hill. And you got pictures. He's, the Alabama congressional, both parties, he's posed up with everybody getting his picture made up there. In some of the pictures you see, Rebecca Mason with him traveling with the governor, sir, heading up there. Yeah, and the good thing is there, I'll say this as a side note, I would have lost that bet.
Me too.
I would have lost that, but y'all know what I'm talking about. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Don't pretend like you don't know what we're talking about. I would have lost that bet because he is not the governor anymore.
Yeah, I
he
thought
he's not in the most important political position in the state. And she's still around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I guess that shows you why you can't always assume. And I assumed that she was in it for the power, for the money, but she's still there. So.
I'm wrong. May December romance.
Yeah, stand by your man.
Yeah, so take it for what it is. I'll take it for what it is and say, I missed that one. I wouldn't have called that one. So I guess good for them in a way that I would have lost that bet. But yeah, so the governor up there, the side note for former Governor Bentley is, do you remember back at the inauguration and he was there in Montgomery and people asked him why he was there? Because we were thinking he was there because he didn't know any better than to go. Because what they do at inauguration is they invite all living former governors.
Right.
Okay, they're all invited to the inauguration when they do this in Montgomery. It's just policy. It's just what they do. But many of us at that point thought, maybe he probably won't show up. So he shows up. At that point, I thought he was just going to be kind of saying, well, I showed up because I'm a former governor. Yes. And I can be at the thing. He was, now this is somewhat hearsay, and I'm not in the business of hearsay, but the person who told me, it was a firsthand account, and the person who told me I trust, okay, firsthand account, that they were there at a party afterwards when somebody, in so many words, said, hey, you're here today. Why? He said something like, I wanted to see the inauguration, and being a real viable candidate for Senate,
yes,
there are a lot of people that want to be here. Now, and somebody, every time I say that, somebody sends on the text line, well, part of the deal he made, he couldn't run for office. He couldn't run for statewide office, mm-hmm. y'all. There was nothing written in there that he couldn't run for federal office. So, semantically, I guess legally, he still could. But he thought he was at the inauguration. He thought he was invited because there's a lot of excitement around the possibility he'd run for Senate. Now, that has not happened. Although, didn't we see Bentley for Senate? Wasn't the website taken, I think?
I think it might have been. I can't remember exactly, but are you surprised that he never jumped into the race, or you think he might be waiting for the other seat to open up?
We'll see. He's got, end of October, beginning of November for qualifying. So I don't think it's going to happen now, but he was toying with the idea at that point. So there you go. So, but he was up in Washington, and listen, he's doing good things and bringing attention for, you know, skin cancer and issues for the state and medical. So, I mean, that part, I'm going to cut him some slack, but I can't help. I've been doing this job long enough. I'm going to still riff on him.
And you saw that it looks, I don't know if, you know, the kids call it a clapback. I don't know if this was a clapback from Rebecca Mason, but with Todd Stacey, good friend of the
yes.
program, who's on Midday Mobile often, he took Mo Brooks' tweet, who said, look who stopped by the office today to discuss skin cancer. That picture you were talking about with yes. Governor and Rebecca Mason. And Todd Stacey says, look who indeed. Rebecca Mason says, I know, right? And it's not even a blurry airport pic. You know, referencing when
I didn't see that
when all the LoveGov stuff yes. was going down and someone took the picture of them together. So
it was a picture at the Las Vegas airport,
right? And a blurry picture, like she said, and somebody kind of off in the distance showing that they were there. I remember they ended up going to the
Celine Dion show.
I mean. What a story. I can't wait until somebody writes a tell-all book about that.
But they did like a GQ story. Remember mm-hmm. that we had that guy on that did the, at that point, the tell-all. But I don't know. I don't know if it's going to come to Alabama Public Television anytime soon.
Lifetime, maybe.
What do we call that? What do we make? I tell you what, that'll be our side mission this morning on the text line. If they were to make... Is it a miniseries or a movie?
Well, it could be either, really.
I think it needs a miniseries. I think it's perfect for a miniseries.
I think so.
What do we call this? If somebody made that, what would you call that? Let us know. 343-0106. 343-0106. And we're coming right back. More of Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. Reminder, too, 9 o'clock this morning, Fairhope Police Department starts their remembrance of September 11th, 18 years ago today. I wanted to talk about in this next segment, but it's been preempted. Breaking news, special preemption. So my friend here, Dalton's reading me what Letty Dykstra is doing on Twitter on this solemn anniversary of 9/11.
Yeah.
So Dykstra gets on the Twitter.
No awareness at all.
And he tweets what?
I don't know if I can say it. It's awful. It's so bad.
I mean, he is a train wreck.
Yeah, he needs to be put away.
Yeah, he is a train wreck. I mean, there's been some stories here the last couple of weeks, stuff he's doing.
Yeah, he's anytime he goes on a radio show, he just loses it. I mean, this is a person who's completely mentally insane. And, you know, today on a day of remembrance, one of the worst days in American history, and we've got Lenny Dykstra tweeting, because it's 9/11, he's tweeting about the
age
of legality for, you know, people around the
country. That's his take on it, is that those people are 18 today, so
ridiculous.
They're legal. I mean, if you want to just watch something, you know, if you're somebody who likes to gawk at things, just follow the...
Complete train wreck.
It is like, I have to go back and, I mean, there's so many things, this Dykstra stuff, the last 2 weeks, he's been on a roll.
He has been, and usually that preempts, that's mm-hmm. comes before, you know, we see him on a mugshot or in mm-hmm. handcuffs, or even worse sometimes mm-hmm. with some of these former famous celebrities. On the other side of the Twitter spectrum, you've been talking about a Twitter account all morning, and which I am now following, but a great follow on this day more than any other day, and that's Ari Fleischer, the former White House press secretary on that day, 9/11.
Yeah, the reason I do this each year and I talk about it is that, so if you go just add Ari Fleischer on Twitter and follow him, you'll get certain things on his tweets. Now, he was press secretary, he was there through the events of the whole day and obviously going forward, and you'll get the timeline things. You'll get the, okay, at this time, the first plane crashed into the World Trade Center. You get that, but he then gives you what was happening behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. He adds context to it, and from the first year he did this to now, it means a lot to me. For some reason, hearing how regular interaction was going on, I mean, in such a critical situation, and how the President Bush was dealing with it, what he was saying, what other people on the staff were saying, where they were going, how they were moving from place to place. It's in a sad way, it's fascinating.
It is, and he's even sharing photos from that day, and one of them, I mean, just think of how every single thing, especially around the president, but everything on that day was magnified. Everything that could have been seen as a potential threat was, you know, double, triple, quadruple, whatever that threat may have been. And just think, with the president boarding Air Force One, he has a picture here where he says, we arrived and started to board the plane at 9:45. Secret Service, which always goes above and beyond to protect POTUS, doubled their efforts, subjecting much of the staff and the press to extra searches. Mm-hmm. And he puts a photo there. Here's the scene as dogs sniffed for possible bombs.
Well, they didn't know that they could trust the people in the White House. That's right. One of the things you get from this, because, you know, we had just been hit, and I'm sure the wiser minds in the intelligence field said, there's no guarantee that these people aren't inside mm-hmm. the White House.
Yeah, you can't assume anything, especially if you're Secret Service and you got the president right there. And this was after the Pentagon had already been hit. And so both World Trade Centers and the Pentagon had been hit at that time. And I remember where I was that day, and I was in fifth grade up at Clark Prep School in Groveville, Alabama, and I didn't even know about it. I can't remember if we had a half day of school or if it was a full day of school.
But you said you went to football practice afterwards, right?
Yeah, all I remember hearing about it when my dad picked me up from football practice, and that's the first I had heard about that. He said he and my mom, they'd found out right when it happened, and had been spending all day, like so many other Americans, in front of the TV watching as it unfolded. And so, yeah, I remember exactly where I was, and I know pretty much everybody who was around remembers sure. right where they were.
Yeah, absolutely. I was in front of one of these things right here, a microphone, and watching it unfold. Talking about parents, both from the aviation field and travel, and know so much about every airport in the country. And I remember asking, because at that point, they remember they had reported that it was a small twin-engine plane or single-engine. I remember asking my parents, you know, I said, well, does general aviation take off out of LaGuardia or JFK, or is it just Teaneck, New Jersey? I remember having that discussion with them, because we, at that point, I still didn't wrap my mind around that somebody was attacking us. I was mm-hmm. still at that first plane. I was trying to, in my mind back then, before the poison of what happened, I thought, well, there's been an accident. There's been an accident. And then you saw the second plane hit. By the way, too, this is one of the tweets from Ari Fleischer. This one from about 11 minutes ago. Get this. Think about how this looks. Picture this. Paint this picture in your head. Ari says, immediately before the plane hit the Pentagon, the USSS burst into Vice President Cheney's office in the West Wing and literally picked him up so his feet sometimes touched the ground, and took him into the bunker under the White House. 1 minute later, the plane hit the Pentagon.
Wow.
Grabbed Cheney. Mm-hmm. Physically grabbed Cheney and put him in the bunker.
That's incredible. And there's been a couple new shows out recently about, I think one of them was about Dick Cheney. No, it was a movie that came out where Christian Bale played Dick Cheney, and they showed that scene in the movie, and Dick Cheney kind of took charge once he was down there in the bunker. But remember when it happened, and people don't remember it, because a few months later, a few years later, you know, a lot of people kind of turned around what they were thinking on that day, and they said, oh, I never thought that we should go into Afghanistan, never thought we should fight this war or that war. But remember how angry everyone was. Just felt so, everyone felt so blindsided by this and so angry at whoever. And before we knew who hit the World Trade Centers, who was the cause of this, behind this attack, everybody was behind the United States going to war with whoever.
Yeah.
And just the emotions were running so high on that day and the days following. And just the one thing that I really do miss about post 9/11, and it was such an awful, awful thing, but the unity that Americans
that 9/12 moment
afterwards, of course, one of the worst days in American history, but Americans kind of came together after that. That's what I remember.
Absolutely. And that's one of the silver linings from this. Also on this day, as I do each year, remember those that died on this day and all those men and women, our service members and even civilians that have died in the 18-year war against terror that still continues with still American military in harm's way fighting that war against terror. So don't forget them on this day. And the one thing people talk about memories and all that, and maybe it's because I come from an audio world. One of the things I do remember, and it wasn't, maybe I sensed something was different, and then somebody said something, and because I was on the air for the majority of the day. I was doing mornings back then, and then continued throughout the day doing all the updates. But I'd step outside to catch a break and get, and there wasn't a plane in the sky. Not a plane in the sky. For days, not a plane in the sky. Just think about that. Look out your window right now and think about that. Days going by. Remember that 18 years ago? Right. Mike Gallagher Show on the way next. We'll be back at noon today. And yes, we've got your suggestions for the name for the mini series about Bentley and Mason. We'll roll those out during the midday show.